January 31st, 2010, is a Walk from Pedro show.
Trees, man. You don't even get too good at the trees, make an apple pie out of it, man. Stand
Walk from Pedro show. Sunday, last day of the first month of 2010, Brother Matt.
Hello, good
morning. How you doing?
Excellent.
We got some people here, Brother Twan.
Hey, now.
You here to see folks?
Yeah, just got back in town from visiting my sister in Arizona.
Yeah. Remember the plan you had to be in Costa Rica for 10 years? Is that changed?
No, it's
well, maybe
still,
you're back.
It's still bouncing around all right, in my brain.
Because I remember last time you were on, you were going to... You did go, right?
Yeah,
you came back.
I went for 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah, it was nice.
God, that was 3 months.
Yeah, that was great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's see, we started off the show with John Coltrane doing It's Easy to Remember, and then our guest today, the Don Waller. Right after John Coltrane, we had your band Imperial Dogs. Well, first you rapping because the string was broke.
Yep.
And then doing This Ain't the Summer of Love, followed by the Blue Oyster Cult version of This Ain't the Summer of Love. Tell us about that rap.
Well, what happened was Paul broke a string. Paul Terrio, the lead guitar player. I'm filling time while he's changing his string because it's not where you have like racks of guitars or anything like that. So the audience is like a bleeping oil painting. It's like Mount Rushmore out there. There's 250 people there. And we charge everybody $1 to get in.
Unless you consider bleep a cuss word.
Okay.
We say fuck, shit,
okay,
dick, pussy.
Anyway.
Turd.
So the audience is like a fucking oil painting. And there's 250 people there that night. We charge them all $1 to get in. We know because we got the door, you know, and we wanted everybody to come there. We put out like... thousands, 2,000
No, this is a Starwood, right?
No, this is at Cal State Long Beach in the multi-purpose room on the campus. And
is
here,
it at nighttime?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's the day before Halloween, October 30th, 1974.
Yeah.
You know, how we got the gig. Fast Freddy from North Torrance.
He's an 11th grader.
He,
Yeah, he's living in Brooklyn now.
Yeah, he's living in Brooklyn nowadays.
Yeah.
And, he knew this girl named Linda Pascal that he went to high school with. They both went to Bishop Montgomery down in South
Catholic Torrance. School.
Catholic school, co-ed Catholic school. So they're from our neighborhood in North Torrance, but we don't know them growing up because we don't go to school with them.
Yeah.
Right? Me.
So you're a Torrance dude.
Yeah, I'm a North Torrance guy, North Torrance Saxons. So is Paul Terrio, the guitar player, and so is Tim Hilger, the bass player.
Mm-hmm.
We had other people in the band and stuff like that, but we needed a drummer. Because our original drummer wanted to play like Grand Funk Railroad stuff, and we go, forget it. We all met in high school band. Paul played alto sax, I played trumpet, Timmy played trumpet. And so we put up ads at
Paul's on guitar.
Paul switched to guitar, Timmy somehow got to be the bass player, and I did. I volunteered.
You know,
to
most people say was put on bass. You say got to be the bass player. I like that.
I don't know how that happened, but
no, but I liked your words.
Yeah.
It's a whole different mindset.
Yeah. I volunteered to jump around and do the shouty bits. So we put up this ad, and this kid answers it, and.
Where'd you put the ads?
Like Wallach's Music City and places like that, you know. And he calls us, and it's Bill Willett, and he's from Carson, you know.
He went to play drums and zippers later.
Right. He just passed
away. Carson on the other side of the Harbor Freeway. He just passed away.
He passed away on November 23rd, 2009. Right after we got the DVD out, you know.
He wasn't that old.
No, he was only 55.
Yeah.
You know, he's only 20 on the DVD.
Okay.
You know, Paul's 21, and me and Tim are 23 at the time.
Yeah.
So
he comes in on drums, breaks a string at the gig.
Paul breaks a string at the gig, and so Linda got us the gig because she was in the honors program at Cal State Long Beach, and... it was going to be part of her thesis on death themes and rock and roll. I couldn't believe they let you do this shit back then, but that's what they did.
Yeah.
And she got us...
Oh, they have punk stuff now.
No, yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
Well, I know people who teach punk in college.
Yeah.
Michael Fourier, who did the Double Nickels books, seminars and stuff.
Yeah, so she got the thing filmed, and they filmed it on these giant cameras that were reel-to-reel, half-inch reel. It was before Betamax.
Right.
And they had to have every light in the room on.
Yeah.
And we didn't know this. So we show up and to
Light, not color.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. Believe me, it's bright as noon.
Right.
You know, yeah. Right there.
For that soap opera look.
Yeah. Oh, it's... Right? And so...
You know what I'm saying? Oh, there's a certain kind
of... It's flat, horrible, washed out lighting. Yeah. Oh, it's, and it's hot as hell.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Because and we're up there in leather and furs and all that stuff. And we're jumping around. And, and what you don't see behind the camera is that one whole wall is plate glass.
Right.
So I got to hand it to the engineers that made these cameras. Because the sound on the DVD is what comes from the mic on the camera. It is recording straight from what you hear in the room.
Right.
Now, we didn't have a soundboard or anything. We just set up on stage. We had one of our buddies, Tom Gardner, go out, stand in the middle of the room and say, okay, balance it.
Right.
And that's how we did it. So we go. Then they tell us.
Tom Gardner.
Yeah, he was in Backdoor.
He was in Ann Arbor.
No, he was. Yeah, he was. You know, he's a Backdoor Man guy. And
he came to Ronnie's thing.
Yeah, well, yeah. He was tight with Ron, you know, and he's from West Torrance.
And he's got a younger brother who plays drums?
No.
No. Who lives in Pedro. He's in he came to one of the Herald's gig. He's a union man. I think off a city clerk's.
He's just
Ted Gardner.
No, they're not related.
No?
No.
You sure?
Yeah, no. I've known Tom since 72.
You don't have a brother?
He has brothers, but not that's not his brother.
You sure?
Yeah.
This guy's from the old days of SST Punk. I had seen him for years.
I think so. Okay, maybe, you know, but...
I think so.
Maybe.
He's a drummer. I didn't mean that. He's a great cat. I hadn't seen him for years, and he came to Harold's, and now he's a union man.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, go on.
So they tell us the lights got to stay on for the filming. Okay.
What's the film? Why does it have to be filmed for the thesis?
That was part of her thing, you know, part of her thesis.
Oh, was it?
You know,
the
filming the thing, the documentary.
She's going to present a thing.
Yeah, you know, and so the great thing is that at the end of the day, we charge everybody $1 to get in. We put out 2,000 flyers for every high school in 20 miles, every record store around the place, you know.
Yeah.
And, but the room is huge, and, you know, it looks like there's hardly anybody there, even though there's 250 people. And 90% of them we don't know.
Did you use, I remember record stores, Sepulveda and Hawthorne was Warehouse?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In those days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We did, you know. So we did.
And also a lot of, in those days, stereo stores.
Yeah.
Pacific Stereo, Cal Stereo.
Federated,
all these, and they were all around that area too. Right?
Yeah.
Well, you don't see any of that shit anymore.
Well, we used to live in Hermosa at one point, and we lived, you know, and so we.
Hermosa had something on PCH, a good record store.
There was three. There was Rubicon on Pier. Rubicon. There was
one on PCH though.
Yeah, but there was also down closer to where, you know, like the Pier. There was the Record Hole.
Record Hole.
And there was a place in Manhattan, right. God, I can't remember the name of it.
I didn't know Manhattan so well. I didn't even know Hermosa and Tarzano that well.
No, but we did all this work. And
it's
okay.
Funny, the Hollywood people say, oh, you're with the beach towns, all you guys, you're all this.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't know that.
It's a long
in fact, there was a name for those people in Pedro called Dappies.
Okay.
Yeah, in the old days. I guess Dapper or something. Like they had money and we were like, Econo.
Yeah. No doubt.
They hung out on the Strand, right? There was a sidewalk thing on the beach and they put their surfboards. And I remember Pedro guys like, man,
I
love them
shit.
Dappies.
I hate all that.
But we went to Hollywood these gigs and, oh, you guys are all the same, you know, you're all cousins.
Yeah.
Anything south of, I don't know.
Well,
Melrose.
So
cousins, we're not kissing cousins.
Well, you know, people say like the South. You know, Tim Stiegel did this piece on us for the new issue of Ugly Things. There's like a 12,000 word story on the Imperial Dogs in the new issue of Ugly Things.
Yeah.
And he says Tim's from Texas, of course, and he goes, "You South Bay people, you're like tribal." And I said, well, you got to understand that back in the day, you hardly met anybody that shared the same taste in music and books and films. And when you did, you just became really quick friends. And I said, Tim, these relationships go back 30 years or more. You know what I mean? you know, you can understand why we're going, who the fuck are you? Yeah. You know, you call up Paul Terrio, he's living in Encinitas now, and say, I want to talk about the Imperial Dog, he's going to go hang up on you. Huh. You know, who the fuck are you? You know, Don says it's okay to talk to you because you're a cool person. Yeah, I'll give you 30 minutes. Uh-huh. You know?
Was there provincialism between Dondo and Hermosa and Manhattan?
You know, maybe, but, you know, the people that were cool regardless of where
they
were.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what happened when I went to gigs. They were from all parts of SoCal, and everybody kind of wanted to forget where they were from.
Well, like Mary Fleener, Paul's wife, who's a semi-famous comic artist, you know, and graphic artist and gallery artist and stuff. She's from Rolling Hills. Helen and Trudy are from Rolling Hills.
Yeah, that's right.
And we met them, you know, later when we had the Backdoor Man fanzine, you know, which Freddie's from North Torrance. Bob Myers was also a staff member. He was North Torrance. The Underwoods.
Yeah, but I think by then it wasn't where you're from, it's where you're at.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm talking about, you know, Square Johnville. Was there?
Oh, yeah, probably, you know, everybody, you know, the beach people were, you know, get you, you know, locals only and all that shit.
I think Artesia was the line between Manhattan and Hermosa.
Yeah.
And then the one between Dondo was maybe, I don't know.
Because there's a little part that's like Torrance Beach down there by
that's
where,
right,
where
that's
Torrance
right.
hits, you know, and
Avenue
stuff.
Avenue I.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know.
Around there. And so all I'm wondering if it was like that.
El Porto is called North Manhattan now.
Yeah. It was used to be El Porto, name, you know. Yeah, you know. I mean, but the whole thing, so.
We should get back to the gig.
Yeah, back to the gig. So we go out there and, you know, we just go out there and we go, fuck it, man. And we just drop hammer, you know. Blast away, and the audience is standing there like nothing. And I guess they're kind of intimidated by the lighting, in all fairness. But also, they've never seen anything like this. We're not playing songs they know. We're not playing songs on the radio. You know, we're doing our own stuff, and we're doing stuff like covers of the Kinks, Till the End of the Day, The Velvet Underground, I'm Waiting for the Man, Mott the Hoople's, Rock and Roll Queen, you know. But the rest of it's all our stuff, and we're up there, we're just driving it. And, you know, we hit the end, and it's like, silence, you know, bomb goes off. You know, fuck you, man. Bam, bam, you know.
Oh, you mean this song's like the encore?
No. So
this is in the set?
It's in the middle of the set. We're going to do the ballad. And so Paul breaks a string, and I just start improvising. I go, well, we're going to flash you back to the, you know, Avalon Ballrooms, you know, Summer of Love, where all the hippies used to go. You remember hippies? You used to read about them in Life magazine. Well, you used to read about them. They should have died out or moved over or something, but they didn't. Now, so we got all this music on the radio like John Denver and Carole King tells you, go up the country, get your head together, don't care about anything, you know.
74 was the year of California Jam. I went to that. I took the bus for $2. Ontario.
Yeah.
Is that that racetrack?
Yeah.
And the band that got the most encores was Seals and Croft. They were doing some song
Calling
for Pigs. No, it was like, Suey, you know, they're playing the fiddle, and people just more and more. I mean, this was, you had Black Oak, Arkansas. And,
yeah.
You know, and Black Sabbath, and, but here, the big encore band was Seals and Croft.
Yeah, it was dire. It was dire, you know. And so I just go into this fucking rant about how we're going to take everybody. There's 8 million people in America who bought the Carole King Tapestry album. We're going to put them all in camps, man. And we're going to kill them all, you know. And I just keep spieling, you know. Yeah. And
he's
saying,
a slow string changer.
And I'm going, well, Paul's tuning, you know, and you can hear him, you know, and I'm going, and another thing, we don't give a fucking shit about trees, man. The only thing you can do with a tree is chop it down and make an amp out of it, you know, and, you know, so, you know, I'm just full
You're
on
provocative.
I'm just full on raging, you know, just trying to, and people are like, and I go, all right, you hippie trash, you fucking scum, this ain't the Summer of Love, and then we hit the tune, and then, this is in October of 1974. After this, we play Rodney's English Disco twice. The first time, Iggy Pop comes out to see us. We've got pictures of that. It's in the DVD booklet, which we were just jazzed at. Iggy came to see us.
Yeah.
And then
that's where his infamous
where he cut himself.
The drama and Ronnie in the Nazi shirt.
Yeah. That all happened there.
But Rodney, he asked Ronnie to whip him in this Nazi shirt.
And yeah, there's so a Ronnie, death of a virgin.
Ronnie's whipping on him. And Iggy's telling him, you got to do it harder. And Ronnie said, I couldn't do it harder. So Ronnie's buddy grabbed the whip, and I'll do it, and laid into him. And it goes out into the street and shit, and Ronnie said, and they left somehow, stumbled off, and he didn't see him again for a long time. That was a trippy thing. Were you at that thing?
No, I didn't see that.
You know about this?
I know about it, yeah. It was legendary, you know. I mean, and there's pictures even, you know, of it I've seen. But, you know, so we played there twice, and then we played a hall party down at Dominguez Hall when we were second building.
Dominguez Hills.
Yeah. No, it was not.
At that time, it was a community college.
It was not. It was Dominguez Hall, you know, over in Carson or something. It was just on Dominguez, you know. It was just a hall party we played, and we were second.
You mean a hall?
It was just like a reunion hall or something.
Oh yeah, ethnic hall.
You know, Ukrainian. You know, people would say like, we're gonna have a wedding party. We're gonna have Joe and Mary Blow are gonna get married, and then they would book a gig. You know, we're gonna
rent
have a
it
band.
Out.
You know, like that, and that's how they would get it in there. And then you know, all these kids would show up. I just remember a lot of fights that night and stuff. It was gnarly. We were playing opening act for a band called World War III. Not any of the World War IIIs you ever heard of. These guys were just a bunch of Deep Purple wannabes. You know, and you know, and then. The band breaks up. You know, we've been together for 3 years under different names, you know, the core band, but the same four guys. And, you know, just frustration. It was just so hard to get gigs. We played Gazzari's before we did this DVD thing in March of 74. We played there for free because these promoters...
First you have to try out, right?
First, this promoter said, well... We're going to throw this big party, and we're looking for a band, and maybe we'll give you guys a gig. You play this gig for free. We don't care.
Oh, man. You didn't play for the old man.
No. We go, fuck it, we don't care. You know, I mean, we want a gig. You know what I mean?
Yeah, remember him, the Godfather? Yeah. Only foxy guys on my
asshole, you know. I mean.
He'd make everyone sit up, they move the PA, and they'd try you out. But this was an outside promoter.
Right. So we get in there, we play, and of course, half the crowd is our friends, and half the crowd is these squares, you know. And... We play, and I do this slide down the mic stand, and I'm wearing a pair of jeans, and I rip the fucking crotch out, and I'm not wearing any underwear, and my dick starts hanging out. And I could feel it, you know, chafing against the chair, you know, and stuff, and I'm going, oh, fuck, I'm tucking my dick in, you know, I'm trying to sing.
Liberation movement.
And people are freaking, you know, and stuff, and old lady Gazzari, his sister, freaks the fuck out. And starts screaming, animals, animals, we've never had such animals at Gazzari's. And she makes me get off the stage, everybody get off the stage. And so I go backstage and I go, I need some underwear. So I go to the chicks, I go, anybody got any underwear? And about five chicks hand me different pairs of underwear.
Nice.
Which I really felt like a rock star that one moment in my life, you know what I mean? That's the only time, it's closest I've ever come to it.
Fishnets.
You know, so I grab this pair of hot pink ones, I throw them on, keep the rip in the jeans, go back out there, we finish the set, they tell us, you're band for life. You guys are never playing here again. So we can't play there. The Whiskey is closed down to some coca, you know, some theatrical bullshit. You can't play the Starwood unless you're a cover band. There's nowhere to play. There's, you know, there's nothing but hall parties. We can't play bars. We're not playing top 40.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, and so we were just happy to do this gig. So, so anyway, we do this thing at the Summer Love. The band breaks up, and we'd met Kim Fowley. Because hanging around Rodney's, and he met Murray Krugman, who was the co-manager and co-producer of the Blue Oyster, called it some party, and Kim calls me up to his apartment and says,
"Kim Fowley's a tall man."
Kim Fowley and Murray Krugman are there, and they say, "Well, what do you got?" I play him the tape that we had. We had a tape of one of our last rehearsal practice sessions, and it was like. You know, just us playing live in our garage that we soundproofed ourselves with insulation and carpet remnants that we liberated in the name of the people from a dumpster and that kind of thing. And we played in there, and some buddy, friend of a friend, brought over the first stereo cassette recorder we'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. So we hung two microphones from the ceiling like it was, you know, like field recording, and we had our own PA and stuff, and we just... What you hear is what went down.
Yeah.
So I played that for them, and they had the lyrics, and Krugman liked the song, and he takes the song with him.
He was an A&R man, too, for Columbia.
Yeah, at one point. So he takes the song with him, and so a couple months later, he calls Fowley and says, we're going to do the tune, but, you know, we're just keeping this little piece of it. We're keeping the title and the hook, This Ain't the Garden of Eden, This Ain't the Summer of Love. And for that, we're going to give you 12.5%. So Kim takes the publishing for hooking up the deal, and I get the 12.5% of the writers. Mm-hmm. Murray wrote the lyrics and gave his new lyrics with plus my hook to Albert Bouchard, the drummer who writes the music.
For Blast to come.
Right now, so then I'm thrilled. You know, I mean, they cut it. It's on Agents of Fortune. The record goes platinum thanks to Don't Fear the Reaper. It's in their set. It's been on a bunch of greatest hits packages. Since then, it's been covered by the Nomads under the name The Screaming Dizbusters, which is a BOC song.
Right. Yeah, Seven Screaming Dizbusters.
Yeah, Seven Screaming Dizbusters. And so the Nomads out of Sweden do it. The UVs out of Australia do it on an Australian bucket full of brains, on a bucket full of brains flexi disc. L7 does it for the I Know What You Did Last Summer movie. It's on the soundtrack to that. It's not in the movie, but it's on the soundtrack thing. So L7 does it. Lizzie Borden, the metal band out of L.A., does it.
Does the 12% still apply?
Mm-hmm. Nice. And, but the only money I've ever seen is the money from the BOC version.
Uh-huh.
You know, who else cut this thing recently? Current 93, this weird British band, did a version. And then Green River, when they do Swallow My Pride the second time in 89, at the end of it...
Green River, the one with Mark Arm?
Mark Arm and Steve Turner from Mudhoney and Jeff Ament and Stone Gossard from Pearl Jam. And that one other guy, the drummer, I think, you know, were Green River. And they did the song Swallow My Pride, which the Fastbacks did and Soundgarden did. And then they did it a second time. And the second time they do it at the end of Swallow My Pride, Mark Arm goes into This Ain't the Summer of Love, you know, and it kind of repeats. And so it's all kind of cool. I'm really happy about this. Mm-hmm. You know, I got no beef. I get my checks. You know, I got no fucking beef with anybody about it. I'm thrilled. The BOC, we were big fans of. We saw them play the Hollywood Palladium. We saw them play Long Beach Arena, Long Beach Auditorium, the Santa Monica Civic. You know, we were big fans of the band. And some of the music that we do on the DVD, you could tell that there's a lot of BOC influence in it, you know. And the other thing that was a big influence on us was, of course, Iggy and the Stooges, because we saw those shows at the Whiskey. I saw 9 of those shows with the Raw Power Band, you know, which was just... Yeah, and it just... That just changed our whole way of thinking, you know.
Ronnie was on bass.
Ronnie, yeah, and matter of fact...
Stefan piano first,
and then Scotty Thurston, you know. And, you know, the thing about that is my brother, my little brother, is 5 years younger than me, Jim... Went to the Whiskey one night with a little tape recorder, a cassette recorder, and he's sitting up in the balcony where there used to have benches up there, you know what I mean? And he taped the Whiskey show of the Stooges.
It was like right field.
Yeah.
We're looking at
yeah. Yeah. And my brother taped it, and I gave that tape to Greg Shaw. I traded him for some MC5 live tapes. Greg Shaw booted that thing.
Of course.
And
many.
That thing has been booted. That all those Whiskey shows come from my brother's original cassette, which I still have.
Right.
You know.
Does it sound just as bad?
Well, it's what it is. You know, it's an exact replica of what you heard in the room, you know.
I've had to learn songs off that.
Yeah, you know.
It's very difficult. Heavy Liquid and...
Things. Yeah, and Open Up and Bleed and Cock in My Pocket and... Head On.
Sick of You, Head On.
Yeah, those four songs are on my brother's tape, as is Search and Destroy.
What about the She Creatures?
I saw them do that, but they didn't do it that night.
But Greg's booted that. That must be
yeah,
from another...
Yeah, I don't know where he got that, but She Creatures of the Hollywood Hills was a great song, you know, and... And also, if you see the Dolls movie that Bob Gruen did, you know, the All Dolled Up movie, sure. The documentary, you can see...
That's got some of that kind of video.
You can see...
That flat...
You can see Paul Terrio and myself and Tom Gardner and a bunch of other people from the Backdoor Man crew standing on the street at the Whiskey waiting to get in. I'm wearing a white suit with a bowler hat like Alex in Clockwork Orange, and Paul throws a cigarette butt into the... gutter. Obviously, we froze the thing down to freeze frame to see that, because we go, wait, we were there. We were standing out on the street to see the Dolls, you know, then, you know. So, obviously, we were way into the Dolls, too, you know. And, you know, that's the kind of thing. Now, the best thing about the show at Cal State Long Beach, where the DVD comes from, is that Linda, the girl who got us the gig and got it filmed, had the brains to buy the tape from the school for $16, which is more than it cost to park there for an entire semester back then.
Oh, I remember.
She bought the tape. She gave it to me. We rented one of these huge machines the size of a small refrigerator and played the tape, and we just hated it. All we can hear is the clams, the non-audience reaction. I mean, I'm up there in leather pants, and it's so hot, and the leather trousers are stretching that they're slipping down my ass, and my pubes are exposed, and I keep trying to pull them
up.
That's
like an Iggy thing.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean it.
Pants cost?
I didn't mean to be. Oh, they were $100.
Yeah, there were a lot of, in those days. That's
yeah, a lot,
lot
of money. You know,
money. I remember Levi's in those days were $12.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
Converse was $4.
Yeah, you know, I mean, so we're doing all this stuff, and like, it's really annoying because I, you know, it's distracting, it's annoying, and I can't do all the moves I want to do, and you know, and you know, so we just hate the tape. And I throw it in my drawer for 35 years.
Yeah.
Now, what happens in the interim? After the BOC cuts the tune, we have the Backdoor Man fanzine we started right about the time the band breaks up, just right one issue before the band breaks up. You know what I mean? Me and Fast Freddy and all these people.
I read Backdoor Man.
Right.
Stories like on the Doors.
Yeah, you know, and the BOC and Patti Smith and the new...
Right, her gig at Sweetwater.
Oh, yeah.
Sweetwater, wow.
Yeah.
By the Fleetwood?
Yeah, that was our third anniversary party. We charged everybody $3 to get in. It was Patti Smith and Lenny Kaye.
Don, can I stop you? I got some music from Taiwan I'm going to play.
Go ahead.
So before the first hour runs out. But we'll get right back. This is very important stuff you're talking about. So.
Ah, you know, it's we're old homies, man.
阿里阿扎的 ABCDE， 自己给爸莫搬家，阿龙他们。
主攻耶，也是老祖先，三马打拼杠杠杠拼人将，用天分你的台版，带有台版的军，台版心，不敢接，不敢接，不敢死，不敢卖冲天炮，不敢卖穷山穷下，乃雄心超出，不会恶是啥？台版有良心，有啥不知咱犯啥？咸马改唔好，自己吃不起。
乃东马改你清楚谈，唔好唔对自己革命啊！在呀，金毛太敢来革命，就会台湾人，真济地把头卡起扛，真真在在好人赛人，来讲一百年金主党，你革命就会台湾人。
lot from Pedro Show. There's some stuff from Taiwan. Mongol Breaks by Iron Ska. Your Name is Taiwan from Ko Chao Ching. We Don't Even Shake Hands by 8mm Sky. The Doom of Giant Kingdom by Moo Child. And NNA by Hecate, which just shows you, doesn't matter where you're at, if you're going to play death metal, you're going to have that Cookie Monster cat singing for you. Even in Taiwanese China. We'll have some music from China later, too. Brother Don, you know we're coming up on the end of the first hour. So we'll get more to that three-year party in Redondo Beach. No, actually, it was Torrance, wasn't it?
No.
Is it Don?
I think it's Redondo.
Or is it Hermosa?
No, it's Redondo.
Anyway, hold. It's the first hour of January 31st, 2010, Watt Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour two. Let's dream by committee. January 31st, 2010 is the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
的落日流落，
Thank you. it was
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show. Start off the second hour with stuff from China. PK14 with Naga Bangwa. Here Comes Your Woman by Torture and Nurse. Shengi's Aria by Shengi. And Relax Is Just Sex by Orgasm Denial. And Pills by Xiao Wang. Now, to pick up...
Okay, where
the music's all over now.
Okay.
Even though that's Cradle Civilization, they had tunes going a long time ago. But we're hearing...
Okay, we're talking about...
We're talking about the three-year party.
The three-year anniversary of Backdoor Man.
Put on. What year?
It would be 78.
78.
At the Fleetwood in Redondo Beach, we charge everybody $3 to get in, mm-hmm. and the bill was Patti Smith and Lenny Kaye, who did it for free because they were the inspiration for the magazine and pals of us, and they're cool people. And the Zippers were one of the acts, and also the Pop, which was all the Zippers and the Pop and the Imperial Dogs all had singles out on the Backdoor Man indie record label, which was a spin-off of the magazine. And the Pop would later have an album.
Well, you should talk about the magazine. How did it start?
Okay, Freddie called me up.
It's fanzine. I tried to talk to people, young people, about this. You got your bone phone?
Yeah.
Because now they got internet and people connect really easy without living in the same town. Yeah. And in those days, didn't have that. So the fabric for community was the fanzines. And I try to tell people, in a way, the ethics stayed the same, even though the technology and stuff changed. But to understand fanzine history is very important. And to know what can't the potential of internet. Internet doesn't have to be a lot of jive shit.
It
can still bring those ethics. Like, this is fanzine people. I know people that like the certain kind of thing they're way into. And why do we have to go to a gatekeeper like, Rolling Stone or something?
Yeah.
Why don't we just print up our own and make a parallel universe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well.
So how'd you guys get going?
Well, I think it was when we came to see Patti Smith at the Whiskey, when she just had Lenny Kaye with her, mm-hmm. and right after the Piss Factory single had come out.
Yeah, I remember
and,
that.
And Freddie had gone up to Tower Records in L.A., on Sunset Strip, sure. and he had come back with copies of this. Mm-hmm. Now, we knew Patti from her writing in Cream magazine, mm-hmm. and we knew Lenny because he had done the Nuggets compilation of garage bands. And so we go up there and we see him, and there's hardly anybody there that... And most people don't get it. And we go back upstage for the first time because there's nobody there. And we start talking to him. We go, man, we really liked what you did, blah, blah, blah. And, hey, you guys are really cool, And that kind of made us feel like we had some kind of worth or something. You know what I mean? That, that we weren't crazy or...
Validated.
Yeah, validated. So Freddie is inspired by this and says... He calls me up. I'm living in Carson at this point, and he calls me up and he goes, I'm going to do a magazine. All these other magazines suck, which we all agreed on, and we got to do our own, and I'm going to call it Backdoor Man. Do you want to write for it? And I go, yeah, sure. And I go, and get Tom Gardner and Dee Dee Fay and Bob Myers and Don Underwood, too, because they were all good writers, and, they all had opinions and stuff like that. So we all pulled our thing, and we started doing it. This is in February of 1975. So we did 15 issues of the fanzine. We interviewed New Order, with Ron Ashton and Dennis Thompson, that band when they were living here. B.O.C., Nugent, Patti Smith and Lenny, Blondie, all these people. We gave Jenny Lenz, the photographer, her first anything. Freddie saw her shooting the motels at the Starwood and goes, let me see those pictures. So I got a magazine. She goes, you don't even know what they look like. He goes, don't worry about it. She takes that picture of Debbie Harry with her panties showing.
That's a great one.
Which we put on the cover, of course. Bam, that's the cover shot, man. Jenny gets in all kinds of trouble for that, And we did 15 issues. The last ones had color covers, or one color actually added.
Where'd you get the name? Is it from the Dorso?
From and the blues,
Actually, they covered.
Yeah, the Howlin' Wolf tune that Willie Dixon wrote, And
Brother Matt went over Willie Dixon's house.
Wow, out in Woodland Hills there?
Glendale.
Glendale, okay.
Yeah, yeah. That was great. great experience.
He was a very nice man, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know, Willie's great.
He's a bass player.
Yeah. And he's one
wrote songs.
One of the great songwriters. Yeah. Wang Dang Doodle, you know. I mean, I couldn't even begin to list them all, you know.
Yeah, he had a drawer full that he still never even got to.
Right,
for all
occasions. Oh, I remember him telling the Blasters when they did some PBS kind of show together or something like that. He goes up to Dave and he says, "I bet my head on a chopping block that I got a song for you." So anyway,
back to the
party. We headed at the Fleetwood in Redondo Beach, which also was a smokestack. Was that before or after? You know, and it's where a lot of Decline was filmed.
Yeah, it was Fleetwood by that time.
You know, so three bands on the bill, and we charge people $3, and we do it. And Patty calls me up to sing with them, and it was the guys in the Pop were playing as the backing band, and Lenny on guitar, and Patty, and I go, "Oh fuck, I don't know what to do. Let's do Money." You know, and so I get up there and I'm screaming away and I can't hear myself, there's no monitors or anything, and Patty's supposed to take the second verse, right? So I go like this, and Patty is just cracking up because I'm just out there, you know, just going for it, and I go, "Oh, fuck," so I start to, you know, I can't remember the second verse, so I just sing the second first one again, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Somebody actually taped this and sent it to me, I got a cassette of this, and it's the last time I sang on stage. I have not sung on stage, you know, for 32 years, you know. So
she's got that song Redondo Beach.
Yeah.
Is that
I don't know if she did that.
It's kind of a reggae tune.
Yeah, you know, and Redondo Beach is a beach where women love other women, you know. It's got that lesbian kind of thing. I don't know, maybe, you know.
Makes you want to go to Redondo Beach.
Well, I suppose, you know. Just to watch. So that was the third anniversary.
Chauncey Gardner.
The last.
I like to watch.
Yeah, the last two issues actually had foldouts.
Why'd you quit?
Well, our printer wouldn't print it anymore. And every time, what we did is we took all the money we made from it and we would roll it over into the next issue. No one ever took a dime from Backdoor Man. No one ever took a dime. None of the staff, anything. We just rolled everything over in the next issue. The printer wouldn't print it anymore. They got religion or something, and it didn't like the content. I even put on a three-piece suit, went down there and begged them, you know, like a businessman, you know, and no, we don't want anything
about
to do.
About another printer.
They were all way too
expensive.
It was too expensive, you know. And by that time, Dee Dee was managing the Zippers, and Freddie was being Fast Freddie, and I had gotten a gig working.
This is the Precisions.
Yeah, but you know that was even later. He was just being a man about town, know. And I got a gig working for.
That's kind of a good job, man about town.
Oh yeah, yeah, you can't beat the benefits, you know. you know. So, and I had gotten a gig writing for Radio and Records, the trade magazine, by then. You know,
he's cool people though. If anybody deserves a gig like that, Freddie does.
Oh, still, he's a great DJ. Yeah. You know. That's what he does a lot. He has a job working for a non-profit organization there.
He came out here a couple months ago.
Yeah, he was out here. We DJed together at the Bigfoot Lodge with Lee Joseph. It was fun. And we had
Lee Joseph? That's still happening?
His last gig was the end of December, you know. They replaced, you know, they said that the bar had receipts were down 50% in the last year. And they just couldn't really afford to do the DJ thing there.
I played there a few times.
Yeah. It's kind of a cool little place.
Yeah, it's done up like a lodge with logs and shit.
You know, yeah.
It's like Los Feliz, and the golf course is across the road.
Yeah.
What's the joint?
It's called the Bigfoot Lodge. Yeah, it's in Atwater Village, you know.
Right, the bridge.
Right, you go
across.
Right over the bridge, you know, from Los Feliz. Yeah, it's just east of the river.
Right.
And,
he came down to the Redwood, though.
Oh, yeah, he did, when the Zeros played, you know, that was that same weekend.
I hadn't seen the Zeros play in 30 years.
Well, exactly.
When they were teenagers.
Well, you know.
That was great.
You know, saw him play the Whiskey, I mean, you know, and Freddie was like the MC when it was the Nerves and the Germs played the Orpheum there across the street,
you know,
from Tower there, those gigs, those famous gigs.
Yeah.
You know, and the Zippers were on the bill, and we were all there, you know. I mean, it was early days. It was before the mask,
yeah.
You know, I mean, we're, you know, all this shit what we're talking about was mostly before the mask. And then, you know, after the mask, then the other club owners all said, hey, well, this, we could make some money doing this. Mm-hmm. And then there was all these people that said, hey, we could have a band, you know. And whether, you know, it was the Hollywood bands, you know, first, the people that formed up around there, you know, it was people like the Screamers would come down from Seattle, right. You know, or the Nerves from San Francisco, you know.
Some Hollywood ones, too, like Berlin Brass.
Well, that was a little before. They played Rodney's along with us, not on the same night, but...
That turned into Mau Mau's.
Yeah, right? Something like that, you know. And they...
And there was a Bakersfield band called The Quick.
Well, there was a Quick out of
were they Bakers?
No, they're from the Valley. There was Danny Bonaire was in that. It was
later Hofstetter on guitar.
Yeah, Hofstetter on guitar and okay. Danny Bonaire and one of those guys was in the Rembrandts. I think the singer, you know, or something like that. And Billy Persman, who's a bail bondsman. Yeah, and his dad was, you know.
Yeah, those bands were more like the pop kind of thing. There was kind of mixing. I saw them play in like the last good play with them.
Right, that kind of.
And
yeah.
I saw the Nerves with them too.
Yeah, you know, before Peter, we had the Plimsolls, which was a better band. But Jack Lee was in that, and what's the other guy's name?
He made a band too, the drummer man. Beat.
Yeah, Paul Collins, English, you know, Paul Collins beat, you know.
Not England beat.
Not the English beat, but the Paul Collins beat, and Jack Lee, and who wrote
Hang It. What happened to Jack?
I don't know.
He wrote that Blondie song.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hanging on the telephone.
You know,
it's on that Nerves record.
But the thing about fanzines is that we were all dissatisfied and we wanted to get it off our chests, get our spiel out there. And also, when we did it, we didn't realize it was going to happen that we started meeting all these other people. You know, we met Helen and Trudy from, that were up from Rolling Hills and stuff like that. And we started meeting this whole wider group of people.
In Pedro, we call it the Hill.
Yeah, you know, PV, you know. But I had known...
See how it looks down on us.
But I had known... I had known...
I think it's a more gradual slope up there on the west side. But on the east side here, very steep.
Yeah, well, I had met Keith Morris when he was working at Rubicon Records when we were living in Hermosa. And I met Greg Ginn around that time, too. Mm-hmm. So I knew them before they had the band. You know, and stuff like that. And so we started meeting all these people, and then we started, you know, taking the magazine up to Hollywood to sell it, you know, stuff like that. And we met Greg Shaw and Fowley and all those other people, you know, and all the Hollywood people. So the thing started building, and then, you know, the thing got thicker, and we these crazy lesbian chicks called us up, and they said, we love your magazine, but it looks like shit. We can make it better. They were typesetters and graphic people. And so they came in to handle that thing and do some writing for it too, and we built it up. We started getting it distributed nationally, you know, to hip record stores in Cleveland or Chicago or New York or whatever. And we did foldouts. The last two have a foldout where it's Johnny Rotten at the Gwinnerland show, the last Sex Pistols show, right. And the review of it is on the back. And
kind of S&M outfit.
Yeah, you know, and the review is
did
on the.
Did you go to that gig?
No, I didn't.
It was raining really hard. I was going to try and drive up there.
My feeling is they'll be back. I had no idea that it was.
I thought they didn't want to play LA.
You know, I don't. You know, that was all McLaren's shit. They didn't, you know, and I didn't realize that it was. That kind of crap was going on behind the scenes or anything, you know, and I just thought, oh, I don't want to hassle my record people for a gig, you know, that I knew, you know, and so I just didn't do it. A bunch of people did. Dee Dee went up there, and she filed her story and was, like, crudely typewritten, and, you know, I edited it, and I got all my marks in it and stuff like that, and there's parts where she's X-ing out stuff and, you know, and all that stuff, and I looked at it and go, man, let's just put this in the photocopier and run it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we did. So the review on the back is just written like it's just as, it's got that kind of feel to it. And I thought that was the best graphic thing we ever did in the magazine.
It's a good call.
You know, it was, you know, I'm very proud of that.
But it stops in 78. That's around when Slash started. Did anybody
Slash was
on?
A little before. Freddie went over to Slash.
Yeah, Freddie wrote for...
And he did some writing for there.
His name was Kickcloud, but...
No. Kickboy was a different person, you know. Kickboy Face was Claude Bessie, and he was part of Slash, and Jeffrey Lee Pierce
writing for him.
Yeah, Freddie went.
That's the one guy I recognized from Backdoor Man.
Right, Freddie. He's the only one that went.
Someone writes for Kickboy for Claude.
Yeah,
and then yeah, but I don't think Jeffrey wrote for you guys, did he?
No, no. We met him later. You
he
know,
he was way into
reggae.
Reggae.
He was ranking Jeffrey Pierce.
Ranking Jeffrey.
You yeah. know,
he ended up making a pretty good band.
Yeah, Gun Club and all that stuff.
Writers
you know?
Who make bands.
And
sometimes that works out pretty good. But was Freddie the only one from there to go to Slash?
Yeah, yeah. I was already doing this day job, but I didn't care, you know. I mean, and I started writing for other places. Like, I started writing for the New York Rocker and for, you know, out of New York. You
Didi married Nels.
Yeah.
Is that how you met Nels?
Yeah. Well, I met him because he was working at the record store at Rhino.
Right, many
you know?
Years. Yeah.
And then, you know, Didi split with me and married Nels. And, you know, we became friends, you know, and I've known Nels for, you know, 30-some fucking years now.
Yeah.
And the various people, like, I started writing for the L.A. Times in about 1981. You know, and so I was doing stuff for the L.A. Times and other places.
Craig Lee.
Yeah, Craig Lee was one of the... He was a Slash person and went over to the L.A. Times, too.
Yeah, he's one of the guys.
He was in
he's
Catholic
the first
Discipline.
Guy to get the Minutemen in the L.A. Times.
Oh, yeah?
He was in the bags after Geza.
Yeah, yeah.
He's an interesting guy. He passed away
yeah, yeah.
a while ago.
Yeah, a long time ago, in the 80s. But, so, you know, we did all that, you know, and, you know, we reviewed a lot of these people. I mean, we saw a lot of shows, you know, that, you know, for those during that 3 years. And, you know, and then in the mid 80s, I left R&R because I didn't see any potential there for advancement. And I was just going to freelance and write a book. And I did a book on Motown, an unauthorized history of Motown called The Motown Story.
Yeah.
And that came out in 85. And lo and
you learn a lot about James Jamerson?
Yeah, a bit. I've read that Dr. Licks book that came out afterward, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know,
I mean, in your research for the Motown.
Well, I talked to Earl Van Dyke, who was the keyboard player, because
sure.
he was still alive. Jameson just died right about the time I was doing the book, so I didn't
You know, and the bass got lost. No one
yeah,
knows
I know, I know. I mean...
It's so tragic what happened to him.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that guy was a monster player. He's one of the...
Everyone on bass owes that man.
Yeah.
On electric bass.
Oh, yeah. Him, McCartney, Entwistle, and Duck Dunn are the four major bass players, and Carol Kaye probably, you know, is L.A. studio.
Jack Bruce, I used to.
Oh like yeah,
him.
Jack Bruce, yeah, yeah. Those are the major.
Did you get to see Cream?
No, I saw.
Gordon saw Cream at the Whiskey.
I saw.
Can you imagine?
I saw the original experience.
Cream at the Whiskey.
I saw the original experience play the Forum. In '69, and I saw.
That's where the cops. Right, got all heavy, and Jimmy told to cool out.
Yeah, well, it's bootleg. It's bootleg. Well, you know, it's not, it was actually officially reissued by, you know, like that, you know, the whole Hendrix Forum set in '69 is there. He opens.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he opens with Tax Free, you know, and says we're just jamming and stuff like that. And it's a great set. I mean, it has Star Spangled Banner, Watchtower, 10 minutes of Spanish Castle Magic, man. It's just, boom, you know, I mean.
Did Ronnie ever tell you about him seeing Hendrix? It was in Ann Arbor and maybe 90 people there. And everyone's standing in the back. No one will get caught. And Ronnie walked up there to the front of the stage and watched him.
Whoa.
He said Mitch Mitchell had a... Let's see, he had beers on one side and a bucket on the other, so he's drinking the beers and puking in the bucket.
Whoa. You know, can't,
not same time.
Yeah, right. But you know, yeah. And I saw the Doors play the Forum in '69 with Jerry Lee Lewis opening and Sweetwater. And I saw the Stones play there with Terry Reid, B.B. King, and Ike and Tina Turner. And also that year, there was a place called The Bank, and it was the Blue Law before that.
Bank is in Torrance.
Right off the Harbor Freeway at about Carson Street or thereabouts.
My brother-in-law was just
by Alpine Village.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law just told me about a Grateful Dead show. He went. He's a big Deadhead. He way in the late '60s went and saw the Dead. He said the Bank. Yeah, it was
about '68 and '69. Right. It was open, mm-hmm. And I have friends that went to see more shows. And the one show I went there to see was Males Blues Breakers with Mick Taylor in the band, and the opening act was Chicago Transit Authority, as they were then known.
Yeah, which turned
into
Chicago.
Right, but there was also the Fugs played there, you know, the Mothers played there, Black Black Pearl played there. You know, all these wild bands, you know, and stuff. And, of course, Torrance wasn't going to... Or I think it's actually... It might be in the county of land. I don't know, but it's
Gateway.
Harbor Gateway, they call it now. But Tortilla Flats, as we would call it, you know.
Yeah, right.
You know, but...
East Torrance.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, that was gone swiftly, you know. But, you know, like before that, you never saw bands. I mean, I didn't have access. You know, you'd see bands play, you know, the White Front opening, or you'd see them play on a Battle of the Bands at a custom car show or something, you know. I mean, you know, when I saw Hendrix, I used to see these surf bands in my neighborhood rehearse, and guys would play guitar behind their head and behind their back. You know, they'd do these real acrobatic things, like they're doing Wipeout, and they would all do the quarter-turn jumps during the breaks, you know, like a bump, bump, bump. And they would
right.
turn around, and then the last quarter turn, you're facing the audience again, you know. Right. And I used to see these, like...
wearing the same shirts.
These R&B bands that were either black or white greasers or Mexicans and stuff, all in the suits, doing the steps, you know, with the choreographed horns and everybody doing, you know, coming out there and doing Etta James's Tell Mama with the horns and just blowing. They were hard, you know. They were good players, and they put that showmanship in. And that's something that was a formative influence. I mean, to me, it was seeing James Brown on the Tammy Show. You know, the movie, which I saw in the theaters at the Vista Theater in Gardena when I was 13. My mom took me and my little brother to see the movie. And seeing The Who on television on Shindig when they're playing live at the Richmond Blues and Jazz Festival. And it was live footage of The Who, and they're breaking everything up. And I just thought, this is the most exciting thing I've ever seen. I want to be up there breaking shit with them.
Did you see the Smothers Brothers one?
Yeah, that was later. Yeah, you know.
Did you see that? Yeah, but the funniest thing is, you know, John Entwistle, here comes the bass solo, and the camera guy goes to Pete.
Yeah, well, that was typical.
Yeah,
you know?
Typical shit, right? Always on the wrong thing.
You know, they never get who's playing the actual solo, you know? I mean, it was terrible, you know? But seeing the Who and James Brown, those very physical acts that where it wasn't just standing up there, it was like putting this thing on, and it was done with sweat. It wasn't about props, and it wasn't about smoke bombs, and you know, and all that shit. Right. You know, it was about what do you put into it. It was like we wanted to be like R&B bands, you know, like, you know, those soul bands and blues bands. You know, you get up there and you work, you know, you sweat, you put on a show for the people.
Right.
And, you know, and you're supposed to be wearing clothes that they're not wearing, you know. You're not supposed to look like the audience, you know. You're supposed to be like something special, and you're supposed to prove it, you know. And you go out there and, you know, we drop hammer on this DVD, man. There's like... We do a song, it's like 20 seconds, and wham, you know? I mean,
20-second song?
No. We're not you guys, you know? I mean, we weren't that kind of geniuses, you know? There's a 20-second break, you know what I mean? And then it's like, wham, punch you again, you know?
Yeah,
and here comes another body shot, you know?
He
and
he likes to run the kicks, working man said. Mm-hmm. Speaking of physical... It's time for Brother Matt.
Yeah, time to do it then.
And,
let's get physical.
The spin cycle.
We'll be right back. straight into the ionosphere for experiments. Picture these strings. as layers of the earth. Each one has its own frequency. It would vibrate any strains that were present in the ground.
Brother Matt, thank you so much for your spin cycle.
Cool.
And what was your inspiration today?
Well, last night kind of spilled into today.
Did you hear some of our spiel?
Yeah, a little bit. I kind of got lost there when I heard about the body parts on the bicycle. That was cool. Spinal cord in a jar. That's cool. I kind of got lost a little bit.
The plate glass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don Witnesson did not finger paint.
Yeah, so it was a multitasking spin cycle there.
Okay.
But, yeah, we had a little leftover last night. We saw Antenna at this CD release party.
Yeah.
And so we squeezed some of that stuff in.
Your receptor.
Yeah.
To their broadcast. Okay, we're at the end of the second hour, January 31st, 2010. Watt from Pedro Show. Guest Don Waller.
Yeah, how you doing, man?
And not yet. Hold tight for hour three. January 31st, 2010. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. We'll be right back.
lie, but easily you can't find my words.
Melodia senza re più della mia merda. Thank you.
know who I am, yet I desperately want self-definition. I'm trying to get us to abandon that terminology. I'm saying something inconsistent. I am a non-immigrant. I am who I say I am. I am an employer. I'm not there. I do not sleep. I'm energized by students, encouraged by staff, and inspired by colleagues. I'm speaking to a microphone, broadcasting my despair, but I hear no response. But I hear no response.
I mean, sun is shining. I'm above ground, man. I mean, I don't ask for a lot, man. I'm happy every fucking. People ask me, "How you doing?" Man, I'm happy, man. You know, I mean, you know, I'm on the right side of the ground. You know, I mean, and everything's working. I'm not in pain.
A lot from Pedro's show. We heard a bunch of stuff there from Italy, and started off the third hour with "Everybody Settle Down" by Sigodi. And then we heard Angel Dust by Blind Jesus and Frog and Rolls by Belfi Asso. That's Andrea Belfi, and he's the Fratello played drums in November when I went over the six gigs and the album. And Blind Jesus has got Stefano Paglia, which did the guitar. Mm-hmm. They're mixing that up. They want me to write up words. I've never wrote a word for one of the tunes. I never wrote about Princess before, so I'm going to write one about Tiger. It's the year of the Tiger, so the Tiger Princess.
Cool.
Yeah.
Breaking new ground.
That's good. That's good. I can see the tattoo. You know? Okay.
And then we heard,
back job, you know?
Oh, My Head by the Space Pony. I like the way it's not Space Ponies or Space Pony, but it's the Space Pony. Mm.
Yeah, very distinctive individual.
Yeah. You know, not to be confused with the Space Donkey. And then Storia di Ferro di Defe Casoni by La Via degli Astronauti. And We All Swing Alone by Cap Swing, and then Something Inconsistent by Neckos, who are from Napoli, but Neko means cat in Japanese. I don't understand that. But everybody getting together with different parts of the world. Let's get back to Don Waller world and the both the wheelchair and the FBI bus.
Okay, we'll start with the FBI bus. We were living down in Carson, and what we would do is we would get these houses, and we would renovate the garage by putting in insulation and carpeting.
Practice pad.
Yeah, and and that's how we use it, because there were no rehearsal studios around or anything like that.
Yeah.
So we're down there, and always we would end up living next to the biggest assholes on the block, you know, and we were always being forced to move. There's always noise complaints. We would move into a place, and we'd go around to the neighbors, and we'd say, look, we're a rock band. We're going to rehearse from 6 to 8 o'clock every night, you know, and if you got a problem, come over and talk to us. Don't call the police, you know, and stuff like this. And we had a big sign on the thing, because we had been busted on a cultivation bust, which is another story. But
Ron Mota.
Yeah. And so we had a sign on a house on the front door that says, don't bring drugs in here, because we were on probation, you know. And, you know, because the last thing you need is the police coming out on a noise complaint and then busting you for getting high, you know. And, you know, it ain't like it is nowadays with everybody's little cards and clinics. So we're sitting there rehearsing and or practicing, and all of a sudden through the carpet comes a shotgun. And behind it is this guy with a mustache and a face like a charbroiled steak, and he's wearing
one of the village people.
And he's wearing a suit, and he's got a badge, and he says, FBI. And I'm on the mic, and I go,
You guys are just practicing.
Yeah. And I'm going, well, this is one hell of a noise complaint. And the guy goes to Paul Terrio, the guitar player, goes, you, come with me. He takes him in the house, and he goes to the house, and...
By himself, one cat with a shotgun.
No, we don't know that there's shitloads of people.
Okay.
But they just tell us to stay there. There's other guys are pointing guns at us, so we stay there. He just grabs Paul, takes him in the house, over the couch where there should be a picture frame. We don't have pictures, like, in frames to hang. So Paul just hung an adjustable wrench there. And the guy looks at that and goes, what's that? And Paul says, that's art. You know? And then he sees the poster, because Tim was working at the post office part-time, sorting mail, and he had liberated in the name of the people the Patty Hearst wanted poster.
Uh-huh.
And it's there on the wall. He goes, what's, that's illegal to have that. So they go through the whole house. And
they never showed you a warrant.
No. They go through the whole house, and... They're not looking for drugs or anything, you know. They're not tossing the place or anything. And then they come back in and they go, well, we got a report that Patty Hearst and two black guys came into this address. And we just start laughing, you know. I mean, Patty Hearst, two black guys? You got to be joking me.
SLA.
Yeah. Right. This is when they're on the run. And so they leave and we go, well, fuck it. Practice is over, man. You know, forget this. We walk outside the garage. The whole cul-de-sac.
Did they apologize or anything?
Yeah, you know. we walk out there, and we lived on a cul-de-sac, and the whole cul-de-sac is lined with police cars. And then the street behind us has got cars. They've got the street blocked off. There's helicopters overhead. This whole bit. And what it was with these redneck asshole neighbors of ours, used to sit on their porch at night and clean their guns and drink beer, had called the fucking cops on us. The FBI on us, you know. Patty Hearst and two black guys, you know. Oh, that gets the FBI, you know. And we're just going, but, you know, then it got to be at that place that they just called the police every night.
Yeah.
Every night they called the police. And finally we just go, okay, we got to move. We're here to practice. That's
why
we're...
This is Carson.
Yeah, this is in Carson, so we moved to another place. And but we just got hassled constantly.
Right, sure. They rent the sheriffs.
Yeah, the sheriffs. Yeah, it was sheriffs, you know, and all that stuff. So that's the famous FBI Patty Hearst Imperial Dogs.
Did you write a song about it?
No, you know, I mean, we should have, you know, but we just got hassled so much. I mean, Paul was stopped three times one morning in three different cities driving to work. You know, they told him, you match the description of a murderer. This is a stolen car description matches, you know, and it's just like...
Do you know about SST and Old Torrance and that police department having their little fun with us?
Oh, yeah?
They pull me over. Oh, we're looking for Michael White, but he's got blue eyes. Hmm. And shit like this.
Yeah.
And then it all came down when they went on tour, flag went on tour, and I was opening the door to the captain and every brass thing up there.
Yeah, when they were living, when they had that office on Torrance, you know. Yeah, well, we used to.
They thought it was a front for. Was the record company was fake? It was
right.
Wow, it's a nightmare. I had to go to court, and then finally, a judge threw it out in chambers.
No shit.
Yeah,
they
it was
that
very heavy. I was assigned a public defender and shit.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Pretty creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Creepy. In the old days, there was a real weird thing.
Well, we lived down in downtown Torrance on Cabrillo. You know,
this was what Prairie. No, not Prairie. Cabrillo was the street it was on.
Yeah.
You know, in Pedro, we say Cabrillo.
Yeah.
Cabrillo
okay.
Beach,
anyway, but we
heard of this Cabrillo stuff.
Yeah. You know, but you know, Cabrillo.
But right there, there's a fountain to JFK, but it's shaped like a toilet.
Yeah. You know.
And that it was a former dentist office, and that's where it was across the street was a place that just sold flags.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we lived down there right next to Armco Steel where Paul and I were working. And we lived in this upstairs place. It was like Operandora's below, you know, or something. And we had this upstairs place there. But we couldn't rehearse there. But we were there for a few months as we're trying to find a new place to rehearse, you know, and stuff. And the cops followed us for a mile with their lights out. And we got out of the car, and they threw up against the wall and searched us. Mm-hmm. You know, and we kept home. Where are you going? We're going home. We live there. Nobody lives there. We live there. And after about four times with this, they finally got it through their head. You know, every shift got the memo or something that, yeah, well, these guys actually do live there, you know. So you know,
small
you just
town police department.
Yeah, you just got hassled.
You know, but you gotta wonder, were you being targeted? Was your name specifically on a list? I mean, what the fuck?
They just were. Cops are
put flyers on telephone poles.
No.
There was no Imperial Dog flyers.
No, we put them at record stores and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, music stores and stereo stores and stuff. But
what'd you do with the flyer? How'd you make them? Did you draw?
Yeah, there's a reproduction of the flyer for the Long Beach gig and one of the Rodney shows are in the DVD booklet. There's a 20-page booklet that's there. You know, 3,500 words a liner.
You get this on the web, right?
Yeah,
you go
to theimperialdogs.com. That's our website.
You should spell it.
TheImperialDogs.com, and you can do the PayPal thing, and you know I'll mail you one. And this goes out to anywhere in the world. I'll mail them to anywhere in the world. The DVD will play in all regions. You know, it'll play in. I've sold them to Japan. I've sold them to Australia. I've sold them to France. I've sold them to England. You know, everywhere. Nobody. Yeah, Pedro, you know. I've sold them to Huntington Beach, Point Loma, you know. I mean, you know, every surf spot that the Beach Boys talk about, you know. And the wheelchair story. Okay, we go up to play Rodney's the first time, and, you know, we're really jazzed, you know, because it's a gig, and Iggy's going to be there and stuff. And
how'd you know?
We heard that, you know, some people, you know, because he was living up there with, you know, him and Williamson were still living in that building with Ron and Dennis downstairs and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't really know them then, but, you know, somebody knew and they brought Iggy, you know, whether it was Rodney or Fowley or somebody like that. He shows up wearing a denim jacket, you know, and blonde hair and all that. So we decided, you know, these glitter people up in Hollywood and all this gay shit, you know, and everything. You know, these people think it's decadent, and there's also, you know, and we're from the burbs, man. We're from Nowheresville, you know what I mean? We're from the South Bay, and we just, this bullshit ain't going to fly down here, you know? And, you know, we used to go up there and go dancing and stuff, you know, and you know, with the girls from Carson that we knew and stuff like that. You know, we used to go up there and dance and stuff like that because it was the only place you could hear, like, T-Rex or Slade or whatever, you know, Lou Reed, Bowie, whatever. You know, we were into that stuff, Mott the Hoople, all that kind of stuff. We were into that.
Yeah.
So, and it was a place to go and meet people that were like you, you know, or sort of. But these people were all clannish and, you know.
Cliquish.
Yeah, and they thought they were better than us. And I was like, well, we're going to freak you people out. We got our buddy Eric Sari, who was a fucking narcissistic egomaniac. And we had liberated.
I heard about egomaniacs kind of being narcissists.
Yeah, you know, and we had liberated a wheelchair in the name of the people from somewhere. I don't know where we got this. But we got a wheelchair. And when we used to do this Ain't the Summer of Love, in the instrumental break, I would simulate a puking OD. I went and got some blood capsules and some foaming capsules from the theatrical shop, you know, over on Crenshaw. And I would chew a bunch of them up, and I'd spit out all this foam and blood like I'm dying, you know, an OD, you know, in the middle of this tune. Great fun. So we gave it... We gave Eric a bunch of these things, and Eric is in the wheelchair. We wheel him into the gig. You know, he's in the middle of this little dance floor there. We're playing right up against the mirrors all around us. You know, it's just like a straight little shotgun bar, you know. And Eric is heckling me the whole time. You know, he's just, you know, saying shit. Just give me shit, you know. And so we're doing this tune called Lizard Love, and it's S&M theme thing, and I've got this chain belt that we made all our chains and stuff. We would go down to Sears, and we'd take them to our buddy at a chrome shop and get them chromed and stuff. You know, we made all our clothes because you couldn't just go into Hot Topic and buy this shit.
Right.
You know, you know. I mean, the bass players were in these...
I played this stage at the Warped Tour called Hot Topic, and I asked what this was, and they told me you could buy punk clothes at the mall.
Yeah. You know,
but that's what Hot Topic is.
But Tim, our bass player, he was really hairy, you know, and he was a little bigger than the rest of us, you know, and he was completely immobile on stage. He couldn't move and play bass at the same time, you know. He was a good bass player and he could sing, you know, and also, but he just couldn't move. And we wanted to be more energetic. Okay, we're going to make a Lemons into Lemonade. We're going to chain him to the amp. So we had this thing where I would come on stage and I would chain him to his amp, you know. And Tim had these, we got this hippie friend of a friend, this seamstress. We went down to the fabric store and we got this fake fur stuff that I don't know what you're supposed to use it for, bedspreads or maybe a bathroom rug or something. And we had her make these pants for Tim. So he's up there bare-chested with chains and leather straps and stuff, and then he's got these fur pants on, you know? And Paul had these crushed silver velvet trousers and a pair of motorcycle boots. And
this sounds just like the Minutemen.
And Paul surfs. Paul still surfs. He's always surfed. He's out surfing today, right now, I'm sure.
Right.
And so he's bare chested, you know, yeah. and he's got these things, and I'm wearing head to foot black leather. You know, and the drummer's got like a pink shirt, pair of suspenders, black jeans, and these boots that lace up to about his knees, you yeah. know, and stuff, and shades, you know.
So
and
you guys are all sort of coordinated, you know.
Sort of, you know. I mean, but, you know, so we're wearing these weird clothes and stuff, so... I take off the chain belt and I'm whipping the amps and I'm whipping myself with it and I'm whipping the stage and then I jump into the audience and I just
start whipping them.
I start whipping the fucking dude in the wheelchair with the chain and he starts spitting up all his blood and I turn the wheelchair over and I'm pounding on that thing. I'm not hitting him with the chains. I'm hitting the wheelchair. The fucking audience freaks out, you know, and half the place just goes wham out the exit like that, you know, and we're going. What
again.
Happened?
Yeah.
What do you mean? You know, where'd the audience go? We didn't mean to scare them off. I mean,
apparently there was a line.
Did you really think that we were going to beat up some guy in a wheelchair with a chain? You know, I mean, you know, did you really think this was real? You know, I mean,
even the moment, you never know.
Yeah, well, you know, they just went, you know, I couldn't believe Rodney invited us back. You know, I mean,
he probably does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know,
we gotta get these guys back.
Well,
you know, they used to always go, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think he gave us the gig because Fally had told him about there's these packs of wild girls that follow these guys around.
Yeah, that's Fally's.
You know, I mean, so, and that was kind of true, you know, but they were all just our friends, you know? I mean, and, you know, so, okay, if that gets us the gig, you know, fine, you know? I mean, you know, so, yeah, that was the wheelchair story. Incident, you know.
It was during Lizard Love. Wow.
Yeah, you know.
Is Lizard Love on this thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here, let's play.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. A little tender love song. And it's called Cerebral Vortex.
Thank you.
set. I'd like to dedicate this one to Tom, Dee Dee, Adolf, the Lizard King, and Bo Diddley. This is called Amphetamine Superman.
Show. Well, we just heard Amphetamine Superman live from that Long Beach gig with the Imperial Dogs. And before that we heard something from Philadelphia, a band called The G with Better Days. And before that was Lizard Love, live from that Long Beach thing, Imperial Dogs. And that was the musical accompaniment to the beatdown of the friend in the wheelchair.
Right.
With the blood capsules in his mouth. That drove the folks away. The hall raker.
Yeah.
We're kind of in the home stretch of the show now, Don. So what's your take on all these years? You said you stopped singing in 78. You wrote Rock and Roll and then got out of that and made this book. What about that book on Motown, right?
Yeah, I wrote a book called The Motown Story. You can still get it, used on
Amazon. Weren't you in Spain for a while?
No, that was Don Snowden.
Oh, that's
he moved there,
He still lives there, right?
Yeah, he lives in Valencia.
Okay.
I was a professional writer.
You didn't mention him, but I know.
Yeah. He was a cool guy, you know. I mean, we met him after we started doing the Backdoor Man thing. And Don's a good guy and a good writer, you know, and he's a good friend, you know. And I wish he wasn't living in Valencia because I would see him more often. Yeah. But,
what
you
about,
know.
What about the Rockerati?
Well, I mean, I was
the rock, right? I mean, there's people like Richard Meltzer who kind of invented it, right?
Yeah, and Bangs, and you know,
are right after.
Yeah,
but what about synths?
Well, I mean, I am, I guess, still a journalist, you know, and you know, and I do.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said the past tense. Like,
well, you know, and I've done it, you know. I mean, I wrote for the LA Times for about 10 years until Hilburn threw me out for questioning his sanity.
Or John Prine.
Yeah. And, you know, I've written like 40 sets of liner notes, a couple of chapters in other books. Most recently, I did the liners for the Tammy Show movie, which is going to come out on DVD through Shout Factory in March. And that's with James Brown and the Stones and the Beach Boys and all that stuff.
You were 13, you saw it?
Yeah, I saw it in the theater when I was 13. And it's never been on video, legally. And the Beach Boys segment was cut out after the theatrical showings, and so we restored that, and it's going to be fucking great, you know.
What's it called?
The Tammy Show, well, T-A-M-I.
That's a great thing. What I was getting at, though, do you read contemporary rock writers?
Yeah, I try to read everybody. I mean, there are people that are good and people that I don't. I sit there and go, you know, when you say it sounds like a cross between X band I've never heard of and Y band I've never heard of, that doesn't really help me much. I hesitate to say what I think about most of the writers of past or present because, I mean...
You're kind.
Yeah. You know, I mean, what I always try to do is give people a sense of what the music sounded like.
Yeah.
You know, and whether it's by the choice of the words and by the rhythm of the sentence and that kind of thing. I was asked to do a piece that we're going to do the Rock and Roll High School reissue movie. And they asked me to do 500 words about the Ramones for that. And I turned it in, and then they decided, we're not going to do liner notes on this package. And so...
Johnny's pogoing.
I wrote...
Did you write about that?
Yeah. Well, I mentioned that, you know...
From the stage.
500 words, you know, I just did the whole thing all in caps with a lot of exclamation points. And, you know, it's just...
Like Henry's old diaries.
You know, and it's just wham, 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 because I wanted to get that feel of like, what it was about. And so, and I think you need to tell people what it sounds like. You need to say, where does this fit in historically, and where does it fit into today? I'm not big on writing about lyrics. I have a dream. It's a small one. It's not like Dr. Martin Luther King or anything, but I have a dream that all pop music would be instrumental for one whole year. And then we could see who could really write about music. Because all these people write about the lyrics, they write about the trousers, the haircuts, you know, they write about everything but the fucking music. You know what I mean? And, you know, mostly when you hear, you drive down the street and you hear the, you know, something in your car, you don't necessarily hear the lyrics that clearly. And
it's hard to tell what he's wearing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and these people aren't hip because they don't look right, you know. And, you know, video was the worst thing for music because it makes everybody think of when you hear that song, there's just this one interpretation of it. Can you imagine how bad the video for Gimme Shelter might have been? You know, I mean... You know, how painfully literal, you know? I mean, you know, because when you hear that, you don't hear that. And even
so that's your advice to rock right.
Yeah, you know, and I... And
practicers or new people coming on to rock right. Write about the music.
Yeah, you know, that's my take on it. I mean, I make a living writing about a lot of different kinds of music. I mean, you know, old music, new music. Hey, it's all new music if you never heard it before. It doesn't matter when it was made.
Somebody once told me. You know, the only thing new is you.
Yeah.
Getting out about it.
Right, exactly. You know, and so, you know, it could be vintage funk stuff, you know, it could be anything, you know, it could be music from around the world, you know. I mean, if you're saying I'm bored, I mean, shit, I ain't been bored in, I don't know, 50 years, you know. I mean, you know, there's always a new vein to hit, you know, you're just not trying hard enough, you know, you're not looking hard enough. Yeah. You know, I'm not one of these people who says, oh, it was all great back then, you know, bullshit. I mean, you know, it's great now, you know, there's all these things that are happening now, and there's all the old shit you can go get if you want.
That's great. And, you know, your spirit is live, and it's been a very big honor to have you on the Watt from Peter, your brother Matt.
Very cool.
Oh, it was great to be here, man. It's a fucking.
We didn't get to meet
Tiff and Darrow. They're on international travels, taking a pit stop in Pedro.
No, it's a great honor to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
We're not worthy, man.
Yeah, we're not worthy. It's January 31st, 2010, edition of the Watt from Pedro show. Keep your powder dry.